It's the Friday edition of the Paul Harris Show on the Big 550 KTRS and worldwide via the free KTRS app. Thank you very much for listening. Tim is keeping his eye on the roads, and Max is here in the studio with me. And this hour, each Friday, we take a look at movies. And since there are no movies opening this weekend for us to review, Max and I are going to look back on the entire year of movies and tell you what makes our best movies of 2017 list. We did the worst last week, and there were two movies that were on Max's list that were also on mine. Let's see what the crossover is among the best movies of 2017. And once again, we're going to start at the top.
Oh, no!
We're not doing a countdown. No, we're not doing a countdown.
Nobody's going to care if we get to 10.
Well, technically, we are doing a countdown because we're starting with 1.
That's why we should start with 10.
That would be a count up.
And then let people... I wonder what's going to be number one.
My number one movie... You want me to start?
No, I want you to start with 10.
I'm not.
We're doing this all wrong, Paul.
My number one movie of the year. I will tell you this, that when I reviewed this movie in July... I said then, and you may remember this, I said then it was unlikely that any other movie this year would beat it for the top spot on this list. And here we are, 5 months later, and I was right. The movie is called The Big Sick, written by Kumail Nanjiani, who you may know from HBO's Silicon Valley and many other things, and his wife, Emily V. Gordon, who created a story based on their own lives about when they first started dating. He was a stand-up comedian. She was a writer. They started dating. She had a medical problem that caused her to end up in the hospital in a medically induced coma. I'm not spoiling anything for you. This is the basic starter plot of the movie. And it's from there that the story takes off. Yes, one of the characters is in a coma for a good part of the movie. But the movie is funny. The movie is heartwarming. The dialogue is crackling good. There are great supporting performances by Ray Romano and Holly Hunter. Holly Hunter, I predicted, will be nominated for Best Actress Oscar, although she'll probably lose to Laurie Metcalf. But the story in this is so clever and so interesting. It's too bizarre to not be true. If I found out that this whole thing was fake, I'd actually be upset because it's just too good. And the chemistry between Nanjiani, who plays himself, and Zoe Kazan, who plays Emily, is a real pleasure to watch. And you know what? I've complained in the past, including last week when I had The Comedian as number two on my worst movies of the year list, I've complained many times about actors trying to play stand-up comedians, and they can't do it because they're not actually stand-up comedians. Well, Kumail Nanjiani is. And there are several scenes in this.
Great.
Yeah, there are several scenes in this movie that take place in a stand-up comedy club with other actual stand-up comics, and they're all exactly right in tone. So I love this movie. Unfortunately, the Oscars will probably ignore it because they always give comedies short shrift. But I think that they have a chance, if not at Best Picture, and if not for Holly Hunter, then I think maybe Best Original Screenplay. It's that good. I gave it a 10 out of 10. To give you an idea, I gave one movie this year a 10. Last year, I gave no movies a 10. The year before that, I gave Inside Out, the Pixar movie, a 10.
Sure.
So it's a rare thing for me to say there is nothing wrong with this movie. Was it in your top 10 list?
It is not. I have about five or six movies that are honorable mentions, and The Big Sick is one of those honorable mentions. You recommended this movie after the review. You said, get a sitter and take your wife. So I did that.
Yeah.
And she loved it, and I loved it as well. If you go to KTRS.com on the Max on Movies page, brand new, just posted it today, you'll find my interview with Kumail Nanjiani.
Nice.
All about The Big Sick. And one of the questions I ask is, you know, I heard a interview with his wife, Emily V. Gordon, who said that if she actually wrote what really happened, nobody would want to watch the movie. And he says, he sort of laughs and says that's absolutely true because they didn't really embellish things or make things up. It's just that one scene where he goes and sits and they're all at the hospital and nobody's talking. That would be the whole movie because that's really what happened.
Yeah.
So they have to invent things.
Well, anybody who's ever been in a hospital waiting room, you know there's a lot of downtime.
Exactly.
You can't put that in a movie.
Exactly. So, I also enjoyed the movie very much. And again, it's my honorable mentions. I think you're right about the Oscars forgetting that this movie exists. I hope it gets a nod for Best Original Screenplay. I kind of think it might come up with a big goose egg, though, and that's really too bad.
Yeah, I think this is a movie everybody should see. And it is available now, by the
Amazon.
On Amazon Prime.
Yes.
The Big Sick, number one on my list. What's number one on your list?
Number one on my list is a French film called Personal Shopper. This was directed by Olivier Assayas, who did a film a couple of years ago called Clouds of Sils Maria, which was also my favorite film that year. So it's a safe bet that I really like what this guy does. While he was making that film, Clouds of Sils Maria, with Juliette Binoche and Kristen Stewart, he found a great rapport with Kristen Stewart. Kristen Stewart went on to win the César Award, which is the French equivalent of the Oscar. She's the first American actress to ever win that award for her work in Clouds. While they were working together, he started writing an original script for her, and that became Personal Shopper. This is an exceedingly strange movie, which is right up my alley, and the reason why it tops my list is because I've never seen anything like this, and almost every other movie on my list, I mean, you could say The Big Sick is a romantic comedy, sort of reminds you in places of Four Weddings and a Funeral. I've got other action movies here that can remind you of other things, but with Personal Shopper, I was racking my brain. There was nothing that I could see that it was sort of pulling from. It seems like a wholly original work, which after 100 years of cinema is quite a feat. Mm-hmm. To tell you what the movie's about, Kristen Stewart plays an American expat who lives in France. She is a personal shopper for a very famous person who you never see. You hear about her, but she's off signing things and doing, and she sort of hates her job. And she's only interested in trying to communicate with her recently deceased brother. They were about the same age. He died of a heart ailment that she also shares, and she becomes obsessed with going into old houses and trying to communicate with him. She ends up getting strange text messages from an unknown number, and you don't know if it's her boss messing with her, if it's some other random people that she's met along the way, or if it is her dead brother communicating via text message. Mm. There are these scenes in the middle while she's on the train simply reading text. There's no dialogue, and this goes on for a long time, and it ratchets up the suspense like a Hitchcock thriller. I've never seen this done with a text message before. It goes into the supernatural. It goes into feelings about grief and loss and trying to get over the death of someone who was really close to you. I like what Kristen Stewart does in this film. She's long been an underrated actress because she came onto the screen with Twilight movies and people thought, oh, that's all she can do. Well, there's lots of people who've started off in teen dramas who go on to prove themselves as great actors. And I think that she does that with this very strange movie called Personal Shopper.
Okay, that's number one on Max's list. Number two on my list is a movie we just reviewed a few weeks ago. Called Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. Now, I reviewed it at the time. Have you seen the movie yet?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I did not enjoy it.
Oh, that's right.
That's right.
We talked about it. So there's no way this is on your list.
It is not. It's not even an honorable mention.
All right. Number two on my list, in the movie Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, Frances Dorman plays Mildred Hayes, who's a mother grieving over the horrific death of her daughter 9 months ago. The police have not caught the culprit. They've given up on the case because there are no leads. Mildred decides to rent those three billboards to send the sheriff a message in an attempt to get the investigation going again, and that raises the ire of the sheriff, Bill Willoughby, played by Woody Harrelson, and his deputies, including Officer Jason Dixon, who's played very well by Sam Rockwell. They try to get Mildred to take the billboards down. She refuses. The battle is on, and I'm going to stop right there because to reveal any other plot points is to be the guy who spoiled the movie for you, and I do not want to spoil your enjoyment of what I consider to be a terrific movie, with the best performances I've seen from Frances McDormand since Fargo, the best I've seen since Woody Harrelson, certainly in a couple of years, and certainly way better than the prosthetic-ridden, riddled mistake of LBJ from Rob Reiner a couple of months ago. And Sam Rockwell, I just love him in everything, whether it's Matchstick Men or Moon or Galaxy Quest or so many other things. He's always been one of those go-to guys. Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, you hand Sam Rockwell a script and say, you're playing whatever character, and he's going to run with it and give you a great performance every single time, and he absolutely did in this one. Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, number two on my list.
Number two on my list, I will keep this one short because I sort of went long with Personal Shopper there. And really, there's not much more to say about this movie. I know you haven't seen it. I know you probably won't see it. Number two on my list, Star Wars The Last Jedi.
I have seen it.
Have you seen it?
Yeah.
Did you go?
Yes.
Did we talk about this?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought for some reason you hadn't seen it.
I've gone two times fewer than you have because you've seen it three times.
I have seen it three times. And, you know, it doesn't quite make my number one. But the reason why a Star Wars movie it winds up in my top five, at number two is because I like the chances that this movie takes with the mythology. It's upsetting a lot of fans, which I think is the mark of a great entry into one of these long-storied franchises. You have to upset your fans. You have to do new things so you're not just doing the same thing over and over again. I love this movie. It's a great send-off for Carrie Fisher as well, who the one-year anniversary of her death was this week.
I don't hate your number two pick as much as you hate my number two pick, but I was very disappointed. And Last Jedi, for me, will probably be the last Star Wars movie that I go see.
Wow.
I'm just fed up
at
this point.
You're just done with it?
Of course, I say that every time a Bond movie comes out. I'm never going to see another Bond movie.
Right.
And then 2 years later, Barbara Broccoli has convinced mm-hmm. Daniel Craig to do the role again, and I go see it, and I walk out of there and go, hey, I'm never going to see another one of these. That's how I feel now about Star Wars. We'll see next year. Is next year the year we
actually, we have about 6 months to go, because in May, Solo comes out, which is the story we don't need, which is a young Han Solo. Nobody really wants to see that.
I don't.
I don't think it's going to do very well for them, but anyway.
Number three on my list is Hidden Figures, a movie that I know was on other critics' 2016 list, but I didn't include it because it didn't open in St. Louis until January 6th, so it's a 2017 movie for my purposes, just like movies that are coming out here in the next week or two. Molly's Game is yep. out next week. Mm-hmm. The Post is out 2 weeks from yep. now. Those have already gotten the critics' attention because they played him in New York and L.A., and they wanted to be in Oscar contention. But to me, Hidden Figures is a 2017 movie. And this is one that surprised and embarrassed me, because I did not know that any women worked for NASA in such a capacity in the 1960s as mathematicians, and brilliant ones at that. And if I didn't know any women did it, I certainly didn't know any African-American women were an integral part of our space program all the way back to its earliest Mercury days. And I was a huge fan of the space race as I was growing up. It's a lesson that I, along with the overwhelming majority of Americans, never learned in our history of that era. And shame on our education system for not teaching us about these women. That being said, I am thrilled they finally got their due in a very entertaining story that is playing on cable now. If you've not seen Hidden Figures, I think it's on the HBO channels, and that means it runs 300 times a month. If you haven't seen it, check it out. It's really, really good and very, very entertaining. Taraji P. Henson, Octavia Spencer, Janelle Monáe are the three leads. They're very good. I do think that Jim, what's his name from The Big Bang Theory?
Plays
Sheldon.
He
is miscast in the movie, but not to the detriment of it. Sure. Kevin Costner is in there. He's fine playing the same character he plays in every movie nowadays, and that's all fine. But it doesn't take away from their terrific performances and the story that you never learned that you should have known. It's called Hidden Figures. If you haven't seen it, definitely see it.
Hidden Figures was on my top 10 list last year, because I did see it last year for awards, consideration, and I loved it as well. And to echo your sentiments, it made me angry while I was watching it that we were not taught about these women in school. But yeah. I loved it too.
Number three on your list?
Lady Bird.
Okay.
I gave Lady Bird a 10 out of 10 on this very show, the Showbiz Show, and I loved Lady Bird. I thought it was a great directorial debut from Greta Gerwig, who has long worked with Noah Baumbach. I've not really enjoyed Noah Baumbach's films, though.
Neither have I.
So I was not prepared to enjoy this film as much as I did. Saoirse Ronan is incredible. She'll be nominated for Best Actress, and Laurie Metcalf will win Best Supporting Actress yep. for her work as a domineering mother. What I loved about this was the ensemble felt so real, and there are so many smaller stories that are only hinted at. I felt like when the movie was over, all of these people were still living their lives. It just felt so real to me, and very affecting and emotional, and I give it my highest recommendation.
Now, let me ask you this. This movie is about a 17-year-old girl, and it's a coming-of-age movie.
Sure.
I mean, in every sense of that phrase we've ever used it, that's what this is.
Yep.
What is it that sets us apart so much from others?
I think, again, it's the naturalism and the realism of this movie. This doesn't feel like a big Hollywood production. It's not, of course. It's a smaller independent movie, but a lot of other coming of age films, including the ones that I love, like Pretty in Pink, you have the stamp of, oh, I see what John Hughes is doing here, or there's some flashy direction. With this, it really feels like an honest to goodness slice of life. And I think that's rare.
Yeah. I think it's the characters' relationships in this movie mm-hmm. that make it work. And the characters don't spew the usual cliched dialogue.
Nobody's a villain. Nobody's a hero. They're just all flawed human beings.
Yeah. I had it as number 6 on my list.
Oh, nice.
So that's
our first in common.
That is. That is definitely one of the top 10 of the year. We'll get to more from our list when we come back after this break. I'm Paul Harris. He's Max Foisy. This is the Big 550 KTRS. This is the Big 550 KTRS. Every Friday in this hour, we talk about movies, and since there are no new movies opening up on this final weekend of the year, Max and I are looking back at our top 10 movies of the year. My top 3 were The Big Sick, 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, and Hidden Figures. What were your top 3 again?
My top 3 are Personal Shopper, Star Wars, The Last Jedi, and Lady Bird.
Okay, now we get to my number 4, which is Get Out, in which Daniel Kaluuya and Allison Williams go off to the country to meet her parents for the first time. He's African-American, she is white, and in the car, he asks her, "Have you told them I'm black?" And she says, "No, but it won't be a problem. I mean, my dad's the kind of guy who will say that he would have voted for Barack Obama a third time if that were possible." And Kaluuya gets a little bit anxious about that, and it turns out he's going to have good reasons. Now, this is another one of those movies where I have to stop right there.
Yes.
Because to give away any more of the plot is to spoil the movie. So let's talk about the man who made the movie, Jordan Peele, who I was a huge fan of when it was in the wonderful work he did in Key and Peele,
yes,
on Comedy Central for many, many years.
Great comedy duo.
And this is the first time he has written, directed, and produced a movie on his own. And he has all the chops of more accomplished filmmakers. He gets good, tight performances out of the cast. He keeps the pace moving as the story builds. People talk about this as being a horror movie. It's not. It is also not a comedy, which was nominated for the Golden Globes. You might call it a dark comedy. I just call it a good suspense thriller.
It's a thriller, yeah.
And he doesn't hedge on the creepiness right up to the very satisfactory finale, which, again, we're not going to give away.
It's such a great ending.
It really is. So, number 4 on my list, Get Out.
If you would have told me that that was Jordan Peele's 15th movie, I would have believed you, because it was such an assured debut.
Yep.
And number 4 on my list, Get Out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Good.
So that's something else we have in common.
All right, good. Anything else you want to add about the movie?
I went in expecting a horror film because that's how it was presented in the first couple of trailers.
The bad marketing at the beginning might have hurt the box office a little bit.
Well, for the first half an hour or 45 minutes, I had to sink into the tone that they're going for, which is much more of a suspense thriller with some dark comedy moments. But by the time we got around to that ending, which we won't spoil here, my theater was cheering. They were cheering.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was too. I loved it, and it's number 4 for me on my list.
Get Out. Okay. Number 5 on my list is Brad's Status. And I am as shocked as anybody else to find a Ben Stiller movie on my top 10 list of the year.
It's the first one you've mentioned that I have not seen.
I am not a fan of Ben Stiller. But in this movie, he gives such a natural, non-Zoolander performance that he makes Brad's Status very worthwhile. Brad is jealous of all of the guys he went to college with, all of whom seem much more successful than he is. Brad takes his son to visit some colleges in the Boston area, and he keeps wondering what went wrong with his life. Why doesn't he have a private jet? Why doesn't he even have an airline club card that lets him get on board the plane first? Why did he go to Tufts when his son might go to Harvard? Why did he get left behind in the social hierarchy? He is suffering from a severe case of white male privilege, but he can't stop wondering how it's fair that his friends have so much more than he does. In this movie, director Mike White, who wrote and co-starred in School of Rock and also appeared on The Amazing Race with his dad several years ago, White keeps the camera tight on Ben Stiller's face in some scenes, so we see every nuance of anxiety. And in others, he pulls back the camera just enough to show us the relationship Brad has with his son and his wife and the other people in the world and what the real story is with his friends. And all of it gives us some perspective on his life and maybe even on ours. It is a unique story, particularly because it's a good movie from Ben Stiller. I think at the time it came out, I said it's the only Ben Stiller movie I liked since Flirting with Disaster, which was over 20 years ago.
Wow.
With him and Taya Leone.
Sure.
So Brad's Status is number 5 on my list.
Number 5 on my list is the second science fiction film popping up here. It's Blade Runner 2049. I grew up watching Blade Runner entirely too much because it's my father's favorite film, so it was always on. All the different cuts. I have the special edition briefcase, which has, I think, seven different versions of the movie.
Wait a minute, seven different versions?
Yeah, because two of those are work prints that you can watch. They're like 3 hour long work prints. It's crazy. It's crazy.
What is a work print?
A work print is like an assembly line version of the movie before the editor comes in. And you also have Ridley Scott's Final Cut, which was released in cinemas in 2005, which my wife and I went to go see on the big screen. So I like this movie a whole lot, but I was completely against the idea of a sequel because it is one of the greatest science fiction films of all time, and I thought you can only muck it up if you do a sequel. And of course Ridley Scott was not going to direct it himself, so I thought no, I'm not going to enjoy this movie. But they got a great French director named Denis Villeneuve, who did Arrival last year, which is a wonderful film. He also did Prisoners and Enemy. He's just a fantastic director, and he did such an amazing job with this movie that I didn't think should have been made. I loved it. It's very long, but I don't mind that. It's pretty immersive. It really does follow up on that promise of the first movie. So I was shocked that I not only enjoyed it, but it's in my top five.
Okay. I did not see it, and I'm not going to see it because I hated the original Blade Runner.
And a lot of people did. It's funny. Leonard Maltin gave it a horrible, horrible review, and I had him on my show a couple of years ago, and I said, do you regret that? Have you come around? And he goes, no, it's still horrible.
I knew I liked Leonard. Number six on my list is Lady Bird, which we've already talked about, and I'll just reinforce that I was not a fan of the work that Greta Gerwig had done with Noah Baumbach. I was fooled into seeing Frances Ha and Mistress America, and like I said before about the Star Wars movies, Mistress America made me go, that's it, no more Noah Baumbach. Yeah. I'm not falling for this again. But then Greta Gerwig came out with something, and she's really an indie darling. Mm-hmm. Critics have loved her because they love her in those movies and some of the other stuff that she's done. I think she's a good actress, but she's proven herself a better writer and director. Yes. With Lady Bird, number six on my list. You're number six?
Number six on my list is something you can find on Amazon. I don't think it ever got a wide theatrical release this year. It played some film festivals, but you can watch it right now on Amazon Prime. It's called The Black Coat's Daughter. When it was on film festival circuit, it was called February. Neither of these titles are very good, but the movie itself is on my top 10. I gave it the number six placement. This is the debut feature written and directed by Oz Perkins. That is Anthony Perkins' son. And it is a horror film. It's a very atmospheric, very slow burn horror film that I would compare to The Witch from last year, which made my top 10 as well. If you like The Witch, you're going to enjoy The Black Coat's Daughter. This one stars Kiernan Shipka, who I believe was in Mad Men.
Yes, she played the daughter.
And you also have Emma Roberts as well, who's Julia Roberts' niece.
Hmm.
I'm going to have to let you watch the movie to see who their characters are, but I can tell you that it's about a very strange relationship that these girls have with an otherworldly demonic force, and how it doesn't quite go the way you think it's going to go. This is a horror film. There's lots of blood. There's lots of splatter. But it's a very engaging story that, again, is constantly surprising. And it works as a mood piece. Oz's brother, Elvis Perkins, does all the music. It's very strange music. This reminded me of, like, early David Lynch-style stuff. I really, really enjoyed it. And it's streaming now on Amazon Prime.
And if you look for it there, it's called?
The Black Coat's Daughter.
All right. More of our best movies of 2017 list coming up in a moment. It's the Friday edition of the Paul Harris Show on the Big 550 KTRS. Max is here with me, and we're running down our list of the top 10 movies of the year, and we are up to number 7, a movie that I talked about at great length last week. It's called All the Money in the World. This is the one directed by Ridley Scott, in which he had a crisis when the Kevin Spacey scandal broke, in that Kevin Spacey had a pretty big role in this movie. He wasn't the star of it, but he had a pretty big role. And Ridley Scott didn't want to have his movie ruined by the bad press that was going to come if Kevin Spacey's face appeared on that screen. And people might even stay away from it because of what Spacey has been accused of. And so he got Christopher Plummer to come in. And with just a couple of weeks before the movie was going to open in movie theaters, he pulled off a miracle. He reshot those scenes that Spacey had been in with Christopher Plummer, who gives one of the best performances of his life. And kudos also to Michelle Williams, who is phenomenal as the woman caught in the middle between Christopher Plummer's J. Paul Getty and the kidnappers who have taken her son, who is also Getty's grandson, and has to face off between these two powers. She is terrific in this movie, possibly going to get a nomination for it. And I think that the movie was good enough to make it to number 7 on my list. Did it even make your top 10, Max?
It did not make my top 10.
Okay.
My number 7.
I would have guessed that after you spoke to Ridley Scott, you were still shivering with excitement that you would have just thrown it on there anyway.
Well, I was tempted, and you can find that interview at KTRS.com on the Maxim Movies page. He does say that he thought they would not have been released had he kept that original cut with Kevin Spacey.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Number 7 on your list is?
My number 7 is something that I'm shocked that I enjoyed it as much as I did, that it would wind up on my top 10. This is a movie about the making of one of the worst movies of all time. I'm talking about The Disaster Artist, mm-hmm. starring James Franco as Tommy Wiseau, who, of course, was the very strange mastermind behind The Room. And this is creating a lot of interest in trying to find a copy of The Room, because it's not licensed for any streaming sites. And so people have to actually, I think you can go to The Room's website. I don't know what it is offhand. You have to order it through there. But anyway, if you are tempted to purchase The Room, you should be reminded it's a very bad movie. Very, very, very bad. Even if you liked The Disaster Artist like I did, it's not going to really improve your viewing of The Room.
Okay.
But I love this movie. I think Franco is incredible. He does more than just a caricature or an impression of Wiseau. He really becomes Wiseau. He has these prosthetics on his face. And he might even be nominated for Best Actor, which would be hilarious if he got an Oscar nomination for playing one of the worst actors of all time.
Yeah. Number 8 on my list is a movie that got a ton of promotion on ESPN this summer during the U.S. Open. And then it opened a week or two after that tennis tournament. And that all fit perfectly because it's called Battle of the Sexes. The story of Bobby Riggs and Billie Jean King, who in 1973 played a tennis match in the Houston Astrodome that was watched by something like 93 million people, the most viewed tennis match in history. Emma Stone came off of La La Land with a terrific performance in this as Billie Jean King. Steve Carell is very good as Bobby Riggs. You got a supporting cast that includes Sarah Silverman and Bill Pullman and Elizabeth Shue and Alan Cumming. And you really learn a lot about how important Billie Jean King was to the effort to advance the fight for equality and encouraging other women to do the same. And it's ironic that the movie came out just before we started hearing all the Harvey Weinstein stories and all the other women and the incredible sexism that still exists today, not just in Hollywood, but in politics and business all across this country. It's a very timely movie for that reason, and I enjoyed it enough to make it number 8, Battle of the Sexes.
Do you feel like that one is all but forgotten right now? Nobody's talking about Emma Stone for Best Actress.
Right.
People are saying she's phenomenal in the movie, but nobody's talking about it.
Unfortunately, I think that's true.
Maybe the release date hurt it. Maybe it should have been released 4 or 5 months later.
Maybe. I think if it came out after the Weinstein stuff started, it would have gotten more attention.
Well, maybe she'll get nominated and then people go back out and
I doubt it.
My number 8 is another streaming movie. This one is on Netflix, so if you have a Netflix account, you can watch this. This is an adaptation of a Stephen King book that was thought to be unfilmable. It's called Gerald's Game. Have you ever heard of his book?
No.
Okay, this came out in the mid-90s. It was released right around the same time as Dolores Claiborne, which, of course, was made into a great movie with Kathy Bates and Jennifer Jason Leigh. But Gerald's Game, even though it's one of my favorite Stephen King books, I never thought they would adapt it because it's a very, very strange concept, and it takes place in one room, and the main protagonist is completely naked.
Oh, wait a second. I did see this.
Yes.
This is with
Carla Gugino. Yes.
Who's my future ex-wife. I don't know if you knew that.
She is phenomenal in this movie. It's a tour de force. She's just great. Now, unlike the book, she's not completely nude because I don't think you could make a movie like that, which I understand. But her and her husband, they're sort of on the outs. They go to this secluded cabin to try to rekindle their marriage. And some of that spark includes some handcuffs, and everything is kind of going okay until the husband dies of a heart attack.
He's played by Bruce Greenwood.
Yes. And so then she finds herself handcuffed to this bed in the middle of nowhere. Nobody knows where they are. And the back door is slamming open, and there happens to be a wild dog around, and there might be an escaped convict who's murdering people. It is a great, great movie that is completely tense. It does a lot with just being in one location for the entire time.
Yeah.
There are some flashbacks, but Carla is wonderful. She keeps you glued to the screen, and it features a scene towards the end.
Oh, don't give it away.
I'm not going to spoil it, but I will say it was one of the standout passages in the book. I was wondering what they were going to do. Well, they do it, and it actually made my wife vomit.
Wow.
I'm not making this up. I had to pause the movie. She ran to the bathroom. She came back and she said, I just threw up. That's how great this movie is.
I know what you're talking about.
Gerald's game. It's fantastic.
I will say I didn't like it as much as you did, and maybe a little bit more than your wife did.
She loved it.
Oh, okay. But I will say that I've been a big fan of Carla Gugino since I saw her as Karen Sisko in an ABC TV spinoff of Get Shorty, in which she was terrific playing that Elmore Leonard character. And that if that series were out today on Netflix, it would be a huge hit.
She's never had the career that she should have.
Absolutely. Yeah. Very good actor. All right. Number nine on my list is Dunkirk. There were three movies this year about Dunkirk. This one and Their Finest and The Darkest Hour, with a terrific performance by Gary Oldman. Dunkirk is the one that was made by Christopher Nolan. And if you have not seen the movie and you're going to see the movie, I will tell you what you need to know before this. There are three different timelines all taking place simultaneously. You have the men on the beach trapped by Hitler's Nazi army on the coast of France who can see England across the English Channel, but they can't get there. You have the men in the planes who are trying to shoot down the Luftwaffe that are trying to kill the men on that beach. And you have the Englishmen who are coming in their private boats at Churchill's behest to try to go and save them because the Navy can't get their ships close enough to the ocean, to the beach to save them. It's Dunkirk. If you know about the three different timelines going on, it'll help you understand the movie a little bit better. It has some of the most intense war scenes I've seen since Saving Private Ryan and Hacksaw Ridge. Watching this movie, I thought of the men of my father's generation who served in World War II but never shared stories about it because the memories were too agonizing. I now understand even better why they wouldn't talk about it. Number nine on my list, Dunkirk.
You know, it's funny because number 10 on my worst of list was Dunkirk.
Yeah, there were movies I liked that you hated and vice versa. And that's okay because seeing movies should be a subjective thing. There's no objective notion of best or not best.
Of course not.
Yeah.
No, lists are silly anyway. People love them, but they're all sort of...
But we had to do a show today.
Yeah, exactly. What else are we going to talk about? Number nine on my list is a superhero film. I know how much you love superhero films, Paul. This one is Logan, starring I'm forgetting his
name. Hugh Jackman.
Hugh Jackman, thank you. This is the culmination of his performances as this mutant since the year 2000. So we've had 17 years of him playing this character in, I think, about 10 or 11 different movies once you add in all the different cameos. And the reason why this made my top 10 is because James Mangold, the writer-director, decided to do something very different, and he made an Unforgiven-type movie. This is basically a one-last-case kind of Western, and it throws out a lot of the tropes that superhero movies have been suffering from for a long time, and it has the added distinction of letting Sir Patrick Stewart do some great supporting work as the elderly leader of the X-Men, who have now been decimated and they're nowhere to be found. I like this movie a whole lot. There's a black and white version actually that you can get on disc that's even better because it kind of keys into that sort of Yojimbo kind of, you know, samurai movie. So this one was a big shock for me because a lot of the X-Men movies are not very good, but I thought this was a great send-off for that character.
Logan, number nine on Max's list. And number 10 on my list is a movie that was completely overlooked this year, but I really enjoyed it. It's called A United Kingdom. It is based on the story of Prince Soretse Khama of Bechuanaland, which is now known as Botswana, but then it was Bechuanaland, a protectorate of the United Kingdom. And Prince Khama caused a real stir when he married a white woman from London in the late 1940s. And in doing so, he had to take on the English government, as well as his own family and the traditionalists in his country. David Oyelowo, who was so good in Selma, and also in Queen of Katwe, another small film like this that I've recommended. He is really good as Prince Soretse Khama. Rosamund Pike from Gone Girl is very good as Ruth Williams, the white Englishwoman he falls in love with. Tom Felton, who you may know as Draco Malfoy from the Harry Potter movies, and Jack Davenport are in there too. They're positively slimy as two of the British bureaucrats who, with their upper crust disdain for all things African, take joy in pushing Khama around. It's a real heartwarming and important story of a guy who stood up for himself and his country at a time when once again, England was trying to keep that boot on the neck of not just Africa, but India and so many other places around the world as part of the British Empire, which, of course, we now isn't much of anything because of men like Prince Soretse Khama. It's called a United Kingdom, number 10 on my list.
Before I get to number 10 on my list, I want to point out I did not see the Florida Project. I hope to watch it sometime this week.
Number 10 on my worst of list.
There you go. I have not seen Mother yet.
Number 8 on my worst of list.
And Phantom Thread, which has not screened here in St. Louis.
Not open
and,
yet.
It won't open until the middle of January. My honorable mentions are The Big Sick, The Post, It, the Stephen King story, Atomic Blonde, the remake of Beauty and the Beast, and Split, which was the M. Night Shyamalan movie. But my number 10 is another superhero picture. It's Wonder Woman. I went into Wonder Woman with a whole lot of trepidation because I love that character, and she's never had a big screen movie before. And I was really impressed that it reminded me so much of the Christopher Reeve Superman movies. It was a big, hopeful film that I think Patty Jenkins put her great stamp all over. And Gal Gadot, by the way, what a star-making role. I mean,
absolutely.
She absolutely is this iconic character for a whole generation of young men and women.
Absolutely. My honorable mentions would include Coco from Pixar.
Yes.
The Founder with Michael Keaton as Ray Kroc. Gifted with a terrific performance by a young actress who is phenomenal in that and is now out on DVD. Landline, a new one this year from Gillian Robespierre, who I liked a lot. The Trip to Spain.
Yes.
Another one
that
from...
That almost made my top 10.
Terrific. Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon. Marshall with another great performance by Chadwick Boseman as Thurgood Marshall. And also another movie that got completely overlooked this year, Logan Lucky from Steven Soderbergh. You know, there's a new Oceans movie coming out next year, Oceans 8, coming out next summer. It's the women with Sandra Bullock and a bunch of other women pulling off a heist like that. He's not really involved in that one all that much, but he was very involved in Logan Lucky, which is like an Oceans movie, and is now out, and I don't know if it's streaming, but I know it's out on DVD. If you missed it this year, Logan Lucky is one to go back and check up on. And those are our best movies of 2017 here on the Big 550 KTRS.